Hey, welcome to another edition of You Know You're Getting Old When. So you know you're getting old when you, like, say a very popular catchphrase from a movie and no one knows what the hell you're talking about or referencing. Okay, yes, this movie is goddamn 30 plus years old. And that phrase would be, "Somebody stop me!" Which I try to throw out once in a while, usually with zero effect, unless I'm talking with another old person like me. Oh, remind me to mention zero effect. Somebody Stop Me is, of course, from 1994's The Mask, the Jim Carrey comedy with Jim as a mild-mannered nerd who finds a magical mask and becomes some weird, sexy, supernatural playboy. It's got a really likable Cameron Diaz and the late Peter Green, who plays a crime lord with that perfect Peter Green blend of charm and danger. Oh yeah, Zero Effect. Did you ever see that? 1998 Zero Effect with the great Bill Pullman and a pretty good Ben Stiller, directed by Nepo baby Jake Kasdan. Bill Pullman plays a seriously eccentric, brilliant investigator who's hired by a millionaire, played by Ryan O'Neal, no less, to find some keys. The movie is clever. The Bill Pullman character, his name is Daryl Zero, is kind of a Sherlock Holmes-type genius, with, of course, Ben Stiller as his Watson. It's pretty great with some oddball humor. Daryl Zero describes his sleuthing methodology as objectivity and observation, the two obs. It's a well-constructed puzzle box of a movie, so go track it down, but it may take some investigating to find it. Actually, it's available to stream on The Usual Suspects, so go rent the damn thing. Speaking of The Usual Suspects, actually, you know what, let's skip that and move on. Quick boxing analogy alert. Isn't it wild how Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump have gotten themselves into a similar predicament with their military foibles? Both were overconfident and ill-prepared, and they picked a fight with a seemingly weak opponent. Yes, in this tortured analogy, Trump, Putin were Mike Tyson, and Iran, Ukraine were James Buster Douglas. Trump and Putin picked the wrong fight against an underdog opponent that would not quit, and most importantly, are fighting against an occupation or destruction of their land. The ghosts of Vietnam repeat in Afghanistan times two, Iraq times two. You think we'd learn our lesson, but hey, that would be no fun, right? When you get into a battle of attrition, Washington has the watches, but Iran has the time. Hey, quickly back on the Mike Tyson Buster Douglas fight, which is in 1990. Ah, 1990, the year the Pixies released their third album, Bossa Nova. And The Laws released their only album, the self-titled The Laws. Dude, what a classic that album is. I listened to timeless melodies so many times in my life. But anyway, the Tyson-Douglas fight night is like one of my strongest memories ever. I was home alone on my bedroom on the third floor of this townhouse in Pleasant Hill my parents and I lived in. My sister was in college at the time. And that night, my parents were at a party. My parents were always partying, always leaving me home alone. I'm totally kidding. My parents were the best. But anyway, I watched the fight live on HBO, and I taped it on my combo TV / VCR. Yes, this is the same TV that I shot a hole through the side of it when I shot a 357 Magnum one night in my room. But that's another story. Man, what an incredible fight. I mean, you could not make up the storyline. It was one of those maybe once-in-a-lifetime events. And luckily, my teenage self had the foresight to record it on tape. A little confession. When I just mentioned having the foresight to tape the fight, I really wanted to say I had the foresight and the foreskin. But that would have been terribly tacky, right? I used to rewatch the Tyson-Douglas fight almost monthly for years. It was as thrilling and unpredictable as any movie I can think of, and it was real. You know, I haven't been snapping pictures of newspaper articles to mention on the podcast lately because my fucking phone camera all of a sudden stopped working. So yeah, I need a new phone. Hey, quick note to myself. Do a possible remake of Huey Lewis's song, "I Want a New Drug," with "I Want a New Phone." And God, I hope I'm not the only one that does this, but am I the only one that every other time I say Huey Lewis, I accidentally say Huey Newton? I especially fuck it up whenever I mention his band, too. You know, I'll be like, yeah, man, Huey Newton in the news. And then, of course, whenever I hear Newton, I think Fig Newton. Does your mind work like that? But anyway, Huey P. Newton was the polar opposite to Huey Lewis. Huey Newton was an African-American activist who co-founded the Black Panther Party with Bobby Seale in 1966. Jesus, these are some legendary figures here. Huey Newton was flawed as hell, but the guy was intelligent and had charisma. He was killed on August 22, 1989, on 9th Street in Oakland, California, where I was born and my parents once lived. The section of 9th Street where he was murdered has the commemorative plaque Dr. Huey P. Newton, and a bust of Huey Newton is near the same street corner. But anyway, back to some headlines. I saw a majorly dumbass headline. I can't remember the paper, but the headline had a glaring typo. Senator Susan Collins diagnosed with essential tumor. I mean, is any tumor essential? Is any tremor essential, which is what they meant? And is it a newsflash that Susan Collins has a tremor, essential or otherwise? Have you ever seen this lady? She's always shaking. I mean, you don't have to be Doogie Howser to diagnose that shit. I saw a funny quote. Some guy was talking about the flamboyant big hair of Southern ladies. And he said, there's a saying where I'm from, the higher the hair, the closer to God. Hey, do you remember that Nine Inch Nails song, Closer to God, from their 1994 album, The Downward Spiral? I like some Nine Inch Nails songs, but Trent Reznor has always seemed like a complete phony to me. Like he's playing a part. He rented the house where the Manson shitheads killed Sharon Tate and used it as a studio to record most of the album, The Downward Spiral. It's such an obvious move and not spooky. Both Trent Reznor and the far, far greater offender, Marilyn Manson, seem like completely contrived, inauthentic, and a disservice to mankind. Okay, maybe that last one was too strong. Hey, we all know friends can be assholes, right? I mean, they're pretty much terrible. No, I'm kidding. I mean, I've whittled my friend list down to a small number of people, but this quote is still pretty cool. There's an old Italian proverb that can be roughly translated as, I'll protect myself from my enemies. May God protect me from my friends. Dude, that is so Italian, so Godfather. You broke my heart, Fredo. And here's a quote that's so sinister, so cold-blooded, it beats anything in fiction. The Khmer Rouge in Cambodia would tell citizens during its genocide, to keep you is no benefit, to destroy you is no loss. I mean, that's super chilling, isn't it? In a pretty astute comment from the former Indian Prime Minister about politics, he said, for the last 20 years, the United States has been fighting, but not winning in the Middle East. And China has been winning, but not fighting in the Middle East. And China is a master of the long game. And this last one, and this one is such perfect irony. Health officials in the nation's capital warned people who attended the National March for Life that they may have been exposed to measles, God damn it. Anyway, let that simmer. March for Life and measles. Yeah, you dumb fucks, you didn't get vaccinated. Oh, and I have one last one. Sorry, I may have mentioned this, but oh well. I read an article dissecting the case of that creepy dude, Brian Kohlberger, who admitted to killing four University of Idaho students. The article throws some doubt on the timing of the murders, and this writer concludes it was highly unlikely that one person could have committed the crime in the time sequence. It was a scene of carnage, violent, bloody. And the writer concludes with just another nugget of a quote, implying that Kohlberger had been at the scene of the crime with at least one other person. When Brian Kohlberger was originally arrested at his parents' home in Pennsylvania, he reportedly asked a vexing question to the cops. Was anybody else arrested? What an unresolved cliffhanger, or just a red herring, perhaps. Okay, note to myself, possible great name for a bookstore. Red herrings, get it? R-E-A-D, herrings? And a red herring is an often used metaphor for deception. It seemingly came about in the 1800s when fugitives from the law would supposedly rub a herring across the trail to throw off the hounds searching for them. And you'll get your share of red herrings in a lot of whodunits, along with movies by the master Alfred Hitchcock. Alfred Hitchcock also enjoyed his MacGuffins, and he would have really enjoyed McMuffins. He was a man of some appetite. A MacGuffin is that seemingly important plot device introduced fairly early in the story of a movie, but it turns out to really have not been important at all. It may drive the characters in the film, but it's of little importance to the viewers. And there was a big time passing recently. The real deal total pro production designer Dean Tavalaris died at the age of 93. This guy dominated the look and the world of some truly huge 1970s movies, and he stayed busy into the 2000s. His first movie as production designer was the artsy Michelangelo Antonioni film Zabriskie Point from 1970. I never liked the movie, whatever. There's some fucking in the desert, big deal. But listen to some of these other classics that he worked on, including a fruitful collaboration with Francis Ford Coppola. So Dean Tavalaris worked on 1972's The Godfather, 1974's The Godfather Part II, 1974's The Conversation, 1979's Apocalypse Now. I mean, production designer on Apocalypse Now, forget about it. He also recreated the Las Vegas Strip on a goddamn soundstage in the goofy, flawed, but you've got to see it, One from the Heart from 1981. And of course, the often mentioned Hammett from 1982. No, not Hamnet. Filmmakers in the 1970s took some massively big swings, sometimes succeeding, sometimes completely striking out. But it was such an exciting era with largely practical effects, and you had to rely more on talent than technology. So when I was checking out Dean Tavalaris' films, I noticed he worked on the 1978 William Friedkin goofball crime comedy, The Brinks Job. So I checked it out. God, I love the look of this film. It stars Peter Falk, Peter Boyle, Paul Sorvino, and the great Jenna Rollins, who previously was in the 1974 John Cassavetes film, A Woman Under the Influence, which also starred Peter Falk. And both Peter Falk, John Cassavetes, and Jenna Rollins are buried at Westwood Pierce Brothers Memorial. The Brinks Job also has an absolutely fantastic Warren Oates, who was just kind of a cool-as-hell madman in real life. He lived life fast. He died in Los Angeles at the age of 53 of a heart attack. His ashes were scattered at his ranch in Montana. Warren Oates was famously in some Sam Peckinpah movies and also some Monty Hellman movies. Monty Hellman is one of those cult directors that I never really totally got into. I mean, yes, 1971's Tulane Blacktop is pretty interesting with a compelling cast, including James Taylor as the driver, Warren Oates as GTO, Dennis Wilson as the mechanic, and Lori Bird as the girl. I always found Tulane Blacktop to be a little too cool for school, but Lori Bird was an interesting screen presence with a tragic story. Lori Bird's mother died by suicide when she was a baby, and Lori Bird tragically died from an overdose of Valium at the age of 25 while at the house of her boyfriend at the time, Art Garfunkel. She's buried at Flushing Cemetery in Queens, New York. Rest in peace. Back to the Brinks Job. It's really fun. Peter Falk basically cracks me up whenever I see him. He plays the leader of a group of bumbling criminals who decide to rob the Boston Brinks Company based on a true story. And after watching the Brinks Job, I then followed it up with the 1993 Italian sex horror film The Washing Machine, directed by Ruggero Deodato. Dude, this movie is nuts and kind of awesome. It's sleazy, enjoyable as hell, and gory about a detective investigating, yes, the murder of a man found in a washing machine that belongs to three unhinged sisters. This movie is completely bonkers. There's tons of, like, strange sex scenes. Like this one where a woman kind of, like, rapes a dude against a staircase. She sticks her hand, like, directly into his pants. And the choreography of the sex, like, makes no sense, and it goes on forever. But it's kind of ridiculously amazing. It's kind of like a Basic Instinct on the cheap. But it's got an energy about it, a sense of humor, and some crazy-ass violence at times, like ripping out a heart and shit. I was surprised how enjoyable this dumbass movie was. So anyway, that's about it for this week. You know, I try to stay positive, but I've been a little bit more irritable lately, and I don't like it. The Roman philosopher Cicero said, "Old age is making me more ill-natured." I try to consciously work on my outlook on life, but I'll admit it's been rough lately. Cicero also said, "A happy life consists in tranquility of mind." And a tranquil mind is what we all hope for, what we strive for. Maybe we never succeed, but you got to keep trying. And making errors is okay if you learn from them. Shit, let's end with one more quote from Cicero. "Any man can make mistakes, but only an idiot persists in his error."